work off of this.
Good afternoon. I'd like to call the Chelan PUD Commission to order. Who's the president of the...
Call the Chelan...
Well, we need to...
We adjourn. We're fine.
And I'd like to call the Chelan County Port District Commission meeting to order, please. And if you indulge me for a second, I'd like to introduce you all to Patrick Jones with Mark Erdahl's retirement at the end of December. Long-time employee of the port, as you know, the executive director. The Port Commission has retained Patrick Jones to lead us into the future. We're looking for some exciting things to happen. And please help me welcome Patrick to our community.
And before I turn complete control over to Jeff, I'd like to ask Gary Arsenault to lead us in the flags, and then we call it.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And now I'll turn it over to Jeff.
Stu's quick introductions go around the table here. Patrick, we've met you. Welcome. Don?
Don Etherington, Port of Chelan County District 1 Commissioner.
Ann Congdon, Chelan PUD Commissioner.
Rory Turner, Commissioner of District 3, Port of Chelan.
Gary Arsenault, Chelan County PUD Commissioner.
J.C. Baldwin, Port of Chelan County Commissioner, District 2.
Randy Smith, PUD Commissioner, Chelan County District 2.
Doug Ingram, Chelan County Commission.
Steve Wright, Chelan PUD.
Kevin Overbay, Chelan County Commission.
Quick introductions to the people in the audience back here.
Scott Hutzel, Lincoln County Commissioner, also member of the Public Works Board, state representing county.
One final request before I turn it over, and that is, and the mayors are familiar with this, but others in the audience may not be. Over the course of the next couple hours, we're recording this for our records. So if there's going to be comments made, we ask that you use the mic that's provided there by Jeff Smith.
So speakers will come up to this table here and use that portable microphone. Commissioner Baldwin, you want to reintroduce your guest?
I would love to. Thank you for the opportunity. I wanted to reintroduce Commissioner Scott Hutzel. He is a Lincoln County Commissioner and also sits on the Public Works Trust Fund Board. He's going to speak to us a little bit about it today. Scott and I have served exactly the same length of time on the board and not been able to approve one loan list yet because it gets swept every year. How many years is that now? 6 years? 5 years? Feels like 10. But he's going to speak to us a little bit about it. So, Scott, would you please come up? Thank you.
Good afternoon. JC invited me up today. She said she'd buy me lunch. I didn't know I was going to get thrown to the lions right after I had lunch. But it's a pleasure to be here. I guess we're in the process. You have been very supportive of the Public Works Assistance account, and we, JC and I, have been on the board the same amount of time and have yet to make a loan. But we're still battling. Still battling for those dollars. The budget, right in the middle of the budget now in Olympia. In fact, I'm headed from here back over there again today for meetings tomorrow. We're in some budgets. We're not in some budgets. We have some friends. Some people that don't like us too much, which I can never quite figure out. But this year a little bit different. We introduced. The governor brings his budget out first. So we were completely left out of the governor's budget, which then our staff, the Public Works Board staff of the Department of Commerce then, couldn't help us with our production of our loan list and things like that. So we hired a couple lobbyists to help us this year, and which has been fabulous to have somebody that's on the Hill every day working with legislators. They have, we have met, JC and I have met with, along with them, I can't even think.
Pretty much every legislator.
I remember one day we met with 15 different legislators in one day, you know, talking about, and we've testified in front of capital budget, both in the House, Ways and Means, and the Senate side, battling for, trying to, I keep talking about user-friendly, affordable, and consistent infrastructure financing for the state of Washington. And, you know, predominantly we deal with water and sewer for the most part, some bridges, some roads. But there is some legislation that's moving forward. We've had a really good group in the House of Representatives that's been helping both sides of the aisle. That was Representative Ormsby, who chairs that capital budget, appointed four representatives that we've been working real close with. I mean, we've been 20, 25 people around the table putting together some legislation to remodernize the Public Works Board a little bit, too, with some legislators on there. We need to build some champions for the program, if we can keep the program together. And JC's been our interim chairman now for the last 3 or 4 months, doing a fabulous job. She is a great leader for us. There's 13 members, 12 right now, from counties, cities, special purpose districts. So like I said, we're right square in the middle of this budget deal right now. Whether we're going to be alive at the end, whether we're going to have, which was one of the things that did come out in the Senate budget, operating budget, was $100 million in both the 17-19 and the 19-21 biennia for a loan list, which was, most of our friends are not in the majority coalition, which, Senator, if you're familiar with going to Olympia much, Senator Mary Margaret Haugen, a former senator, also sits on our board, and she always says, "Well, Scott, those are your guys that aren't helping us." So, but we cross aisle back and forth. You know, as an East Side conservative, it's amazing some of the friends that you make trying to do the right thing for the citizens of the state of Washington. This program has worked fabulously for 30 years. I often talk to my senator, Senator Judy Warnick. I talked to her Friday, Saturday, and yesterday. So I'm constantly telling her that this program has been it has saved the taxpayers of the state of Washington. When you come down to ratepayers with the lower interest loans and what this program has been able to do for the last 30 years, has saved the citizens of the state of Washington tens of millions, I'd argue hundreds of millions of dollars over 30 years. Because if you have to borrow money for infrastructure projects at the bond level or at 4 or 5%, where we were at 1%, it makes it a lot easier for ratepayers to pay that kind of money back. So, been a fabulous program, almost $3 billion worth of loans, never a default. JC's probably has told you this. I'm still there. We haven't made a loan, but I'm still there because I think I testified in front of two committees. It's the greatest program I think the state's ever seen. I really do. I mean, it's all loans. They're not giving money away. People actually pay it back, and it's just benefited their every across the entire state of Washington. Every corner has benefited from this program. So why, and to keep battling, why don't we keep it going? So, and I'd entertain any questions from. I talk all day. I'm really, really passionate about the Public Works Assistance account, not lending any money.
Any questions for the commissioner? And no, you can't talk all day. Thanks anyway. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very, very much. This is a great, JC's talked about this to me for a long time, and I'm glad I'm finally getting to come here and see what happens.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, getting back to the agenda and the updates, we'll start first of all with impacts of the proposed Wenatchee Comprehensive Plan update, and that's going to be Pat Jones.
That way you don't have to keep turning around. Can you turn the power on for me? There you go.
Excellent.
Is that the right one?
Just right click to move it?
Thanks, Jeff, and thanks all of you. Thanks for the welcome, and over the past 3 months, I've met most of you personally and appreciate the welcome and support. It's very ironic that I'm first up here at my first meeting talking about a subject I have really no expertise in. So here goes, but I've been asked to talk about the port's position on the city comprehensive land use update process. And when I arrived a few months ago, became aware that the city was undertaking, as required, their comp plan update. And as we at the port looked at that, we became aware of several issues of concern to us. So as a result of that, we've identified those issues and we're beginning to participate in the process to address our concerns. We're working with the PUD as well as the city now to identify our issues and then hopefully come to an agreement with between all parties as to how to move forward. But brief background, city annexed in Old Station in 2016, going through a comp plan update now. What the city's proposal does is it expands the North Wenatchee Business District Zone to include port buildings and land, and it changes the Horan block from industrial classification to a waterfront mixed use, allowing multifamily residential, and it prohibits industrial, makes light industrial a conditional use. So here is a shot of the land we're talking about. The port currently owns 53 acres, 23 of which is bare land, got 280,000 square feet of building space in the Old Station Business Park. Just to orient all of you, this is the Horan block, and here's the Confluence Technology Center, of course, jointly owned by the PUD and the port. And you can see the bare parcels that are in place. The red outlines circle the port ownership. This is a current land use scheme in Old Station. The orange is the North Wenatchee Business District. It really promotes commercial use. The blue is industrial zoning. And this is the current land use plan. This is the proposal from the city. And as you can see, the business district expands into former industrially zoned land, and the city proposes a waterfront mixed use on the Horan block. This has several impacts on the port. It certainly changes the future uses of our land and limits those businesses that we can site on those land. It also has the impact of making current tenants, current industrial businesses, conditional uses, and puts the port and our tenants in a predicament if something were to happen to those buildings, of being in a Mother May I position seeking continued authority from the city to operate that use in that zone. So that concerns the commission and what we've done. A little bit of history before I get to what we've done. The port has been responsible for land use there really from 1981 when the county blessed our plan development and delegated authority to the port to oversee future development. The port invested in the extension of sewer, road construction and improvements, and regional stormwater retention facilities. The county approved the building permits and uses based on that 81 plan development. covenants on the property were adopted and since have been updated. Those covenants essentially prohibit residential uses. And during that time, the port has surplused and sold a range of properties on Penny Street and Easy Street into private ownership and development. So where are we now? The port and commissioners have met with the mayor, city staff. We've appeared before the Planning Commission, submitted comments to the City Council. Planning Commission worked with the staff. And our request is for current land use to be left in place. That provides us maximum flexibility. But I think all members of the Port Commission are open to evolving the uses in Old Station, but would very much like to have current flexibility preserved by an industrial overlay at a minimum. So we're working with the city right now, and the mayor has been very gracious in sitting down with the port and the PUD to listen to us and listen to our current concerns. And we look forward to working with the mayor and, of course, the Planning Commission and City Council. Happy to take any questions. Or Steve, did you want to comment?
I would just reinforce that I think we're having a good collaborative discussion right now. We met Friday, we met again today, and we intend to continue to work together.
Frank, anything?
Am I supposed to do that? All right. Good afternoon, Mayor Coontz, City of Wenatchee. Pat, that's a great great backdrop. And I know from the city's perspective, we do comprehensive plan, major plan amendments every 6 years. So our comp plan needs to get adopted in June. As I was mentioning with both Pat and Steve earlier, you know, it's a kind of a quasi-judicial process in that the council ultimately makes the decision based on everything that's in the record. The record's being developed currently, not only by our staff, but by comments from the public. We've gotten a number of written comments, not only from some of the industrial users out in Old Station, but some of the retail components in Old Station. What's interesting out there, if you look at the land uses, it's a mix of industrial, which either wants additional industrial or just do nothing so I can park my rigs there. And you have the retail group that really wants a residential component because retail now needs people nearby in order for it to be successful. That's why you see the retail development up there struggling quite a little bit. There's just not enough people there. And of course, the city has a housing issue that I think the other mayors have agreed with us on. And so at the end of the day, the council has a decision to make about the land use in not only Old Station, but other places throughout the city. And so what gets me excited is that we're having the conversation. I struggle with and have for quite some time. You know, that property was purchased in 1974, and the port's, not this commission, but the port's role is economic development, and it hasn't generated one nickel of sales tax, one nickel of property tax, and hasn't generated the job yet. So the city's perspective is we'd like to see something happen out there. And hopefully this is just stimulating a conversation that, you know, ultimately the city council has the final say in what happens out there. And I will say this. One of the things I've learned being mayor, and the mayors behind me will testify to that, is the things that show up at the mayor's office or at your city council are pretty wide and varying, all the way from mental illness to homelessness. You know, we hear constantly, I've heard it a couple different times from, you know, Confluence Health is on diversion because there's not because of the hospital is full, it's because there's no nurses to staff the hospital, and there's no nurses because there's no places for them to live. And so we hear all kinds of different things from the city's perspective, and I just trust the council will do what they think is in the best interest of the entire 33,000 people that live in the city of Wenatchee. And again, I've enjoyed working with Pat and Steve, and I think the conversations will continue, and hopefully we'll come up with a resolution that works for everybody. Thank you.
I actually have one comment, and I think it's just to put things a little more in perspective, Frank. You know, the port's a countywide organization, too. So while you talk about the city of Wenatchee, well, I appreciate that very much. We're responsible on a countywide basis for our,
Again, at the end of the day, what I would say is, yes, you are a countywide organization, as is the PUD. Right. We're a citywide organization, and the legislature gave cities authority on zoning, and so I think my council takes that very seriously because of the fact that we have to look at everything. You know, you're looking at economic development specifically. You're looking at utilities specifically. We do some of those and quite a bit more, which is why cities have been given by your legislature the authority to make these kinds of decisions. So, again, we want what's best for the port. We want what's best for the PUD. But my council has to look at things in a view for the city. And so just appreciate the lens they have to use. That's all. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is Chelan PUD's long-range facilities planning, and Steve is going to have to leave early, so we're going to move up on the agenda, long-term electrical planning, to follow right after his facilities report.
So you have a package in front of you that's a long-range facilities plan. I'm going to give you the very condensed version. We spent more than an hour with our board earlier this week. You won't get all of that. Anyone that would like to hear about it would be happy to. I think we're coming to visit the port tomorrow, actually, to... No, next week to talk more about the full plan. So it's important to understand facilities tend to be forgotten. These are the buildings. In our case, buildings represent more than 15% of our asset base. I think when people think of the PUD, they think of the hydro projects, transmission, distribution. That is a big part of our asset base, but a not insignificant piece are our buildings. And our buildings are quite old, and I think the term tired has been used frequently. They have been well used, let's say, throughout their life. And we started a year ago trying to think through just what should the future of our buildings be in terms of what creates best value for our customer owners. The buildings do contribute to fundamentally how productive your workforce is and the quality of environment that you create for your people, and ultimately to the cost that get passed on to our ratepayers. We thought this would be a relatively short exercise, honestly. Thought it would take about 3 months. It took us a year because it turned out there was a lot there for us to truly understand. And just to give you one key example, one of the key issues here was productivity of our workforce. And our consultant said, well, the average productivity gain you get is about 3.5%. We said, well, we don't really want to think about it that way. We want to think about it specific to Chelan PUD. So what job categories would be impacted by a change in facilities. And we went through job category by job category, rate of pay, how much time could be saved in a day if the folks were operating in a different facility, and then added that all up in order to make a determination as to what productivity gains we thought we could get out of the various options that we studied. I'm going to flip over, if I could, to just page 4 for a second and say, what were the things that we looked at? Location is incredibly important. 70% of our trips, our work trips, go north of the bridge in Wenatchee. So trying to get to the geographic center of our service territory is a critical piece for us in terms of achieving that high productivity. So where we are today, and particularly not just the location, but the fact that we're spread out, is a low productivity environment. We literally have crews starting in one location, picking up materials, going to another location to pick up materials, sometimes going to a third location to pick up materials before they can get started for the day on the job, and then having to return materials at the end of the day as well. So it's a costly way to do business. And if you've been in our back lot here, and you probably have, if you parked there before, you see that we have large trucks coming in and out of here. We have customers coming in of here. We got employees coming out of here, and we've got a fuel island, all within a relatively small area. So it's not a particularly safe working environment either. So we think that there are opportunities in order to be able to provide better customer service, respond to outages, get to the work. We had looked at 2 years ago when I first got here, we had looked at could we create a better customer experience. So if you come here and you're a customer owner and you want to get line extension service, you go one place. If you want to pay a bill, you go a different place. If you want energy efficiency, you go a different place. We are not really set up well to promote a good customer experience. So we think there are opportunities there. At the end of the day, we put all that together in both qualitative and quantitative factors. And if you go back to page 3, we basically looked at this in three places. Facilities at Rock Island and facilities at Rocky Reach. And those are relatively easy to think about because we know the dams aren't going to move, and therefore the work is going to stay where it is. So we built strategies around Rock Island and Rocky Reach, and then basically everything else. So we took the headquarters building, fleet, fish and wildlife, the other functions that sit here on this campus, Holly Street, which is essentially a laydown yard, and CTC, and thought about those and said, what's the best way to organize those particular pieces? Again, looked at a lot of options, 14 different options for this, narrowed that down, and concluded that the best alternatives are some new facilities at Rock Island and Rocky Reach. We have big equipment out there. We do not have the capability to be able to work on that big equipment indoors for the most part. We don't have the ability to store big equipment, and we have people who are working under very difficult circumstances. Welding outside in winter would be one example. I mean, that's basically the kind of facilities that we have. So we think there's some real opportunities there. Then to take the entire complex of what's here, Holly Street, CTC, and try to consolidate it in one place north of the bridge. We think the net present value of all of those activities, and it's a has a cost of roughly $180 million to do all of these things, that there is a net present value of roughly $11 million benefit associated with that at a 7% discount rate, which is the standard discount rate that we use, the same as if we were making investments in a hydro turbine or a distribution line. So we treat these assets the same as we had treated all the rest of our assets. We engaged a customer advisory group in that conversation and showed them our results a few weeks ago. If you turn over to page 6, there's a summary of their comments. They unanimously expressed support for the plan itself, for the work that went into the plan, the development of the analysis. The strongest comment I think we got was that if anything, they felt the plan was too conservative, that the discount rate we used was too conservative, that if you had used the PUD's actual cost of money, there would be more benefits here. So we ran the numbers just to see, and instead of that $11 million, it would be somewhere between $40 to $60 million of benefit. But we feel comfortable that we've done it in a way that we think is the right way to do it, and it still provides what would be a benefit where if this was an investment in a hydro turbine, we would quickly go forward with that investment. If this were Rock Island or Rocky Reach and we were looking at these numbers, we would say that is a worthwhile investment. We need to find the capital in order to be able to proceed with it. So we are now at the point of having presented to our board the last time. We'll be coming back to our board looking for public comment, basically trying to get to a conclusion of, are we in the right quadrant? Is this the right direction generally? If it is the right direction, then we would take the next step forward, which would be to start thinking about, well, how would we get this done? What work would we take on first? Over what time frame would we make this happen? And then what financing plan would come along with that? So how do we get the money in order to be able to do it? So do we take it from our existing reserves? Would we borrow at some point in the future for it? As you know, we're in reasonably good financial shape today, but we do anticipate, and we've shown our board last year, long-term look over the next 15 years, we would expect to get back in the bond market in that 2020-2021 timeframe. So how does this fit with those considerations will be all part of developing a more formal plan that probably would take us at least another 60 to 90 days. We take public comment through the next board meeting as well, and certainly would welcome any comment from anyone here. And if you would like more discussion, like we will be coming to the port to go through this in more detail, we'd be happy to meet with anybody that has an interest in doing so.
Any questions on this topic from Steve? Okay. Long-term electrical planning.
So we know that loads continue to grow in the county, and where we've seen the greatest challenges are in both the Leavenworth and the North Chelan areas. We have been on a mission for the last 18 months working with customer advisory groups to try to find locations for new substations, and we're coming to the close of both those processes closer in Leavenworth than we are in Chelan. So let me start there. We've had really excellent engagement from a variety of community members in the Leavenworth community. We showed them our finalist list about a month ago, and have now been back and visited, in particular with the mayor and the city administrator, to talk about that finalist list. And they have identified two sites that are preferred. One is a preferred alternative, and the second is more of a backup site. We brought that back to our board at this last meeting, and we are now off seeking to make the preferred alternative work. So we're doing the detailed engineering and design work, and understanding where on those sites we would place a substation, what it might look like, what some of the issues are in terms of access that would need to be addressed. And we're doing that in consultation with the city as we move through that process, so that they have the ability to engage and see the plans as they develop and work with us about their thoughts. In Chelan, a bit more difficult road. We started with the idea that we should try to focus the search for a site for the substation in the area around what's called the load center, the center of where we see load growth in the North Chelan area. That was not particularly popular. And so we looked at other alternatives that hopefully would hide the substation a little bit more, but moved it away from the transmission lines and into more remote areas. We tried to warn folks that what that would mean is more transmission and distribution lines. I'm not sure that we were well heard on that. And in fact, I think it is difficult to understand exactly what the implications are of that until you see the maps and you see the actual engineering and design work, and you see exactly where the lines would go. And that was something we weren't able to do without doing a greater level of detail on engineering. So we presented that about 6 weeks ago, and when folks saw the actual here's where a line would go and the amount of miles of lines, there was a pretty strong resistance to moving forward with those options. We went back and did some additional analysis to look at what are the impacts on view sheds from the various options, as well as what would be the number of property easements that we would have to acquire in order to make those options work. And armed with that additional information, we went back to the customer advisory group a couple of weeks ago, and they unanimously said that the new areas that we had gone to didn't look that good, and we should go back to the area that we had started from. So I wouldn't say that we are starting over, because we have a whole lot more information than we had before, including some pretty specific information that we didn't have before about how various options would impact view sheds and number of property easements, which is an important part of this consideration, clearly. So we're now back looking in that zone around the load center to try to find locations that will keep the cost down. I guess I left out an important part of this, which is the cost of the three new alternatives that were on the table and are now off the table were substantially higher, a good $3 million per site higher than the areas around the load center. So we're back now looking at options that are more in the range of the probably $7 million for a substation site rather than the $9 to $12 million options. So cost, clearly a big concern. View shed's a big concern. Our ability to get this done has become an increasing concern, because now, as the 18 months have passed, in both Leavenworth and Chelan, and particularly with the cold winter that we had this year, we are finding that we are stressing the existing substations beyond what we would normally consider as tolerable. So we are quite anxious to try to find conclusions here and be able to move forward with the construction to be able to meet our fundamental obligation to assure reliability for those communities. Hope to be able to make decisions soon. Certainly in Leavenworth, we are in about a 60 to 90 day process to do the additional engineering work, and hope to be able to pick a preferred alternative site within the next 30 to 60 days in the Chelan area.
Questions for Steve or comments? Thank you, Steve. Next item is revenue guarantee for expand of Pangborn Airport service. Greg Larson.
Good morning, Commissioners. And thank you for this opportunity for me to speak with you. I'm Craig Larson, the Business Development Director for the Port of Chelan County. We also operate Pangbourne Airport, which is primarily what I'm talking about today. But since this is a community effort, it's not just about the airport or the port. So I'm going to brief you just for a couple minutes on a community air service investment program, which we are embarking upon, and we're asking for your help and community help as well. The goal of this effort is to get a daily direct service from Pangbourne Airport in East Wenatchee to the San Francisco Bay Area. And thank you, Anne. I appreciate that. She's doing high fives over there or something. We appreciate that. So why, besides making the commissioner happy, do we want to get direct service to the San Francisco Bay Area? We want to promote economic development in the region. The tech companies in the region are very interested in service to this part of the West Coast. The tourism in our area can take advantage of direct access to a whole new market that we, I'm sure, touch now, but the direct flight just incentivizes people to travel to where the plane goes. And then also, as an example, we currently have an advanced manufacturing prospect that's based in the Bay Area that's interested in coming up here, and they would love to see a direct flight as well. All told, this service is good for business, it's good for people, and it's good for growth here for the region. And this is truly a regional effort. So how are we going to do this? We're going forward on a community process to share the risk of this new service. And so the ports are in, the airport is in, the community is going to put up some pledges. We're going to match that 2-for-1 with a federal grant and create a nice big pot of money to help help the airline that does the service. They're going to put in part of the, share part of the risk. So everyone's sharing the risk on this service. If it's successful, some or all the pledges get returned. And the amount of money we're looking for is $400,000 locally. And again, we match that with a federal grant and with our airline partner, and go forward with the service. One question might be, why seek community support? Well, it's not just about the money. Many times in this world it is, but it's about the money. It's about the $400,000 in pledges, but they also want to see broad-based support, want lots of names who contributed funds, who are supportive, who have passed resolutions or done letters of support. So it's a community-wide effort that we're looking to head up here. And your handout, which you've got a few first few pages, some graphics on the program, some frequently asked questions is next, and then a pledge form on the back for just a subtle hint there. And the other thing, this is not our only efforts to get more air service to Pangbourne. We continue to look for more service to more destinations, including more frequency to Seattle. We'll be meeting with Alaska Airlines here next month to talk about this project and others. And what this process really does, this community investment, really jumpstarts service at the airport. Gets us another destination, and so we're very, very excited about it. The other reality is this program that where we get the federal money may not be available next year with the new federal budget that's been proposed by the president. So opportunity was here. The money is there for 2017, so we want to go forward and make this effort and utilize those federal funds to help us on this effort. One question might be, why San Francisco? And again, regional support, it impacts the whole region, including northern and western Grant County. And we have some good partners in the Bay Area right now. Both United and Alaska Virgin have hubs down there, and they're both expanding service out of that area. United just announced new service direct Spokane to San Francisco, and Alaska just announced new service from the Bay Area to on Virgin and on Alaska branded aircraft to 13 different destinations, I believe. So both those airlines are growing that hub, which makes an opportunity for us that we want to take advantage of. The timeline for the project is we're going to raise this $400,000 in the next 5 weeks, the pledges, and we'll apply for the grant in June, hopefully get the federal grant in August, talk with the airlines, get the contract in place, service to start spring or summer of 2018. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions you have.
Questions or comments? Okay. Thank you, Craig.
Stunned silence. Thank you all.
Thank you. Next item is water quality monitoring on Lake Chelan. Mike Caputa.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Caputa. I'm the director of the Chelan County Natural Resources Department. Thank you, Sheila. Wanted to get you up to speed on some efforts that a group called the Lake Chelan Watershed Planning Unit has been working on. I think I've presented to you before on the planning unit. They're primarily looking at water supply and water quality issues. All the local, state, and federal agencies, plus a number of local citizens, participate in this forum. Wanted to get you up to speed today on some of the water quality monitoring work that's going on and some of the conversations that we're having around that. Just backing up there, my partner in crime, Phil Long, who is a retired research scientist, lived as a young boy at Lakeside, went to East Wenatchee High School, became a renowned research scientist, worked for Pacific Northwest National Lab, and just recently retired from Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. Now working in Lake Chelan to establish the Lake Chelan Research Institute and work with us on water quality issues. So just a fabulous community resource, and is usually co-presenting this with me, but he has two grandkids in Nebraska who could not be here, who are pulling him to Nebraska from time to time. So it's just me today. So the proposal that we have, and this is something that we have been shopping around on behalf of the planning unit, is trying to raise $50,000, which is the annual cost of doing minimal water quality sampling and testing to understand water quality trends in Lake Chelan. So there's a number of partners here listed on the slide. Some of those folks have already indicated a willingness to contribute to the program. The State Department of Ecology is looking for $20,000. The Chelan County Commissioners committed $10,000 to this effort yesterday. Cascadia Conservation District has put in $5,000. So we're still a little short, but we're making presentations to all of these organizations. And we thought today was an opportunity to present this information to the port and the PUD so you could consider what's going on in Lake Chelan. So why do this? And to a large extent, at least my personal view, I see this as something of an insurance policy for Lake Chelan, right? So we don't have any surprises. If you remember back in 2002, there was some random sampling of fish tissue in Lake Chelan. They found very high levels of DDT in fish tissues, and that then prompted a number of discussions around the quality of the water in Lake Chelan. Could you drink the water in Lake Chelan? Could you swim in Lake Chelan? And this was a story in the Seattle Times, right? So it impresses upon all of us, I think, the danger of not understanding fully what's going on across the entire lake and mischaracterizing the lake just based on one or two randomly sampled. So here's what we're doing. We have a number of sites that we've identified in Lake Chelan for water quality sampling, and we're doing all of this work under a Department of Ecology grant that we received a couple years ago. So we're building a model for Lake Chelan and acquiring all of these water quality samples to feed the model so that we can then characterize water quality trends in the lake. Of course, you would want to do this over a very long period of time, and so that's what we're working on now, is trying to secure the funding to be able to do this for a longer period of time. One of the things that we found this year was in one of the recent samples that we took in Lake Chelan, is that the phosphorus levels exceeded the regulatory limit for the state. And if you were only to collect one sample, this would be a problem, right? This is like the DDT example where you have one sample, and then you assume that the whole lake is characterized this way because that's the only sample that you have. We have other samples that have been lower than this, but the real challenge is trying to explain trends and trying to explain why a sample may or may not exceed the regulatory limit, right? So that's the goal of doing long-term sampling, is that you can see what is actually going on rather than drawing conclusions from one sample. Of course, there are a number of reasons why that one sample may have exceeded the regulatory limit, but we don't really know what the answer is to this. But this is something that we would try to ferret out over time if, in fact, we saw a long-term problem here. All lakes are different, right? So Lake Chelan is very similar to some of the lakes over in Glacier National Park. I think that's at McDonald Lake in Glacier National Park. Very clear to the one to the right of it. Looks a lot like Fish Lake up at Lake Wenatchee. There's a interesting scientific experiment you can see on that picture on the right, where scientists poured phosphorus and nitrogen into a lake and separated it with a barrier, and it turned green, which is kind of what you would expect. We wouldn't expect to see that in Lake Chelan necessarily, but just trying to show you, and Phil does a great job of explaining how lakes work and some of the challenges you can see with the addition of nutrients in the lake. So here's the biggest problem that we have in terms of understanding trends on the lake. These are data points from Secchi disk measurements. So this is where you drop a disk down into the water and you see how clear the water is, right? This is a measure of water clarity. And Lake Chelan is, you can see down anywhere from 10 meters to almost 20, 25 meters. But the bigger problem here is the gap, all those gaps in data collection. So there have been sort of random sampling done over a period of 32 years. I believe, Commissioner Congdon, some of these were done by your brother in the 90s, and in the late 80s, the Department of Ecology and others. But then there are these big gaps, and we don't know necessarily if it was going up or down or the seasonality around it. Most people like to do water quality sampling in the summer, not in the winter. So we have a dearth of information from the winter. So getting that information and, again, understanding the trends and how the lake works in winter is important to us. And students are getting involved. Phil Long, again, is working with the Chelan and Manson High School students. And this data point over here on the far right, that's the first student data point. We noticed that the students saw the highest level of water clarity, and my theory on that is they're just a lot younger. They can see better. So they've been a great help. So again, what we're proposing is the minimum level of sampling to address the parameters that the state regulatory folks look at. So we want to understand phosphorus and nitrogen and all those things that trigger water quality cleanup plans, and we want to understand that better before somebody else suggests that we ought to take a look at it, again, based on small sample size. A couple other things going on in Lake Chelan, just so you know. Phil has been convening a group called the Lake Chelan Research Institute. So there are a number of professors from University of Washington, WSU, and Jack Stanford, recently retired from the Flathead Lake Biological Station in Montana. They've all been willing and eager to participate in a new research institute on Lake Chelan. We have a couple of ex officio members, and if you haven't spent time with research scientists on this kind of a board, I'd certainly encourage you all to have that experience. Phil has been working with the Chelan Chamber of Commerce to bring back the Lake Chelan Keep It Blue campaign. This is something, again, that was initiated in the early to mid 90s, has been largely dormant, but this would be part of a sort of a cohesive strategy of sorts to address water quality and water quality issues in Lake Chelan. There's also a lot of interest from some citizens in Lake Chelan to set up some kind of a community organization similar to what Flathead Lake has. I think they call them the Flathead Lakers. And there's some folks in Lake Chelan who would like to establish that same kind of citizen committee. So that's where we are. We are in our fundraising mode. We have raised just short of $30,000. We're looking for another $20,000. We have some requests out there. I saw Craig very slyly put a funding request on the back of his handout. I didn't think that far in advance, but certainly willing to follow up with any of your staff if there is interest in committing funding to the effort. So, with that, Jeff, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions or comments for Mike? All right. Thank you very much. Turning to the 2017 legislative session, the Peshawestin Wastewater Plant Upgrade Funding. Sean, you can handle that since we already have the Public Works Trust Fund report.
Hello, Commissioner. Sean Seaman with Chelan County PUD. And Jeff, you just want me to touch on the Centennial Grant and save the wireless for after the presentation?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to say, as of 1 o'clock today, the Senate capital budget came out, and Senator Hawkins has been a strong supporter. Give us a call. Let us know they have $35 million earmarked for the Centennial program, which is great news for us. We're looking for our project at $2.1 million, and the $35 million is for the biennium. So we are looking good now. We've had great support from Senator Hawkins. He's worked with Senator Honeyford. We've met with staff, met with Representative DeBolt, been meeting with a lot of people, and we've gotten good support for this project. So at this point, we're looking good for that project.
Good.
And with that, then I'll wait till after the other presentation.
Yep. Fair enough.
Any questions?
Questions or comments? Andy Wendell is going to handle the 5G wireless pole attachments matter.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Thank you for having us. My name is Andy Wendell. I'm Director of Customer Service at Chelan PUD, and with me is my colleague, Katie Marshall. She is the pole attachment program manager here at Chelan County PUD. We're here to just talk about an emerging issue here, specifically the wireless pole attachments in Chelan County. The presentation in front of you was designed for about a 20-minute discussion, but we're going to keep it down to about 5 minutes here. Jeff has just turned his timer on, so by the way, he does have a shock collar on my ankle. If I get over. So please take this information away, talk to your staffs, and have them contact us if you have additional questions or thoughts. Essentially, the wireless industry is growing, and we're seeing a request to deploy wireless technologies here in Chelan County. They do want to attach to utility poles as well as street poles or county light poles of those natures, and Katie will talk a little bit about the specific infrastructure. There are some implications to local governments. In fact, Sean is going to talk about this as a legislative issue that was brought up in Olympia. It was a pretty hot topic this year. And there are some strategic considerations that we're talking about internally, and we've had some preliminary discussions with some of Chelan County staff as well as the City of Wenatchee staff, and we hope to continue that conversation as we move forward. So as I mentioned, the wireless industry is growing. There's the thing called the Internet of Things. We've all kind of maybe heard a little bit about that. Also the smart grid, which has a close nexus with the Internet of Things. But essentially, the data requirements for mobile devices are increasing significantly. More and more people across the world are using mobile devices to communicate in a more near real-time fashion. There's an accelerated demand for data and the transition for data. I think we've all heard and seen that we can, you know, pull up Netflix on our cell phones and stream those over our mobile devices. To mitigate this bandwidth or the wireless data, we are starting to see a movement in addition to the traditional large cell towers that we see up on the mountaintops. We're starting to see more small cells or what we call small cell deployments, or DAS, which is distributed antenna systems, located in more of a localized fashion. So Katie's just going to talk a little bit about how that is happening.
I'll try to keep the technology side of it at a high level for you, not get you bogged down too much in it. The reason that the small cell and distributed antenna systems are becoming more prominent is because they're able to be deployed in smaller, lower elevation areas that you can't probably put a larger tower. So the two technologies that you'll hear about is the small cell and distributed antenna. So what small cells are low-powered radio access nodes, basically used to provide enhanced coverage or capacity in a real small targeted area. If you go back a little bit. What a small cell consists of is one antenna, which you see on the pole top there, plus an auxiliary box, which is lower on the pole, and it covers about an area of 600 feet on average. The other technology that you'll hear talked about when people talk about wireless infrastructure is the distributed antenna systems, also called DAS. Basically, what a distributed antenna system is several small cell nodes combined into a network. So you can see each of the antennas kind of closely together on poles to create a larger area geographically of coverage. But in order for that to work as it's intended, you have to have each antenna pretty close together. So you're going to see them hitting each pole like that in order for it to really work as it's intended to do. Just to give you a better idea of what this looks like actually on poles that are out in the field, the first one you see is an example of a utility pole. On the top is in the comm zone there is what the antenna looks like, and then down below that is what the auxiliary box would be. A lot of times you'll see on a utility pole that antenna located on the top, very top of the pole, which is their preference because they're going to get better coverage from the top. The picture next to it is an example of what that looks like on a street light. And you can see at the far left bottom of that picture is another auxiliary box in those scenarios. Why we wanted to talk to you guys about what happens or why this is important for all of the local governments in Chelan County is because these wireless facilities are going to affect the public right-of-way administrators as well as pole owners and streetlight owners. Just in the last few months, at least at the Chelan County level, is when we started seeing requests at the local level for wireless facilities to be deployed. Sean is going to talk in a minute about all of the legislative type proposals that are out there that would affect the right-of-way as well as pole owner rights with these type of attachments. But there's pretty complex web of them. There's federal laws as well as state laws that would be applicable to each. So for local governments, just knowing what their rights and obligations are within those is something that takes time to understand. Also, the local zoning and other local standards will need to be updated to address wireless facilities, because for the most part, what we would have in place would address just the large macro tower. Because some of these technologies are new to a lot of our local governments, it's important that we take the time to understand the implications that they would have for the right-of-way, for our infrastructure, and making sure that we analyze that before allowing them to be deployed. So across the state, they're seeing a lot of different moratoriums in order to give local governments time to understand the implications. I'm sure all of you have seen that East Wenatchee and City of Wenatchee both have moratoriums in place currently. This is just another slide and kind of showing other examples of wireless facilities, and just saying that, you know, we all know what we don't want to see with the deployment of wireless facilities, and we want to make sure that we're facilitating the deployment of broadband, but doing so in a manner that doesn't negatively affect community aesthetics and system operability. So Andy's going to elaborate on next steps for ensuring that.
Great. Thank you, Katie. When we talk about wireless siting goals with other colleagues in the industry, other municipalities, we've learned that there is some commonality in some of those values that we share. Ensuring this cost recovery for administering this type of infrastructure in the right-of-ways is very important. We want to ensure that we have a fair cost recovery internally for locating these facilities on distribution wood poles. There's significant cost to maintain these, to site these poles, and care for them from a safety and reliability standpoint. We also really want to recognize that here at Shawn PUD, we want to facilitate a process that allows this to happen, but in a very efficient and effective way, meaning we're maintaining our values, but we're able to find a path for this type of deployment to happen. And finally, you know, we want to maintain, you know, our obligation first and foremost for providing, you know, safe, reliable core services in our fiber optic network, as well as our electric and water wastewater systems, as a first order of business, and ensure that the safety that we uphold as the number one priority is continued to be maintained. There are deep concerns with engineers about locating these large facilities on tops of wood poles from a safety and reliability standpoint. So we are taking that very, very seriously, and we are taking it slowly to make sure that we understand what those risks are and we're mitigating those risks. Some of the technical issues, I won't go into detail because we are running short on time, but essentially it's, you know, ensuring that we can still operate these poles, that they are safe for both our workers and the public, and that we're addressing the aesthetic concerns. I think Commissioner Wright talked about some of the aesthetic concerns on the north shore of Lake Chelan and other areas. Aesthetics of utility infrastructure is becoming more and more important all the time. And so we want to make sure that as we are working with these parties to deploy these assets, that we're taking into consideration the potential aesthetic concerns, and we have a path that is in line with the right-of-way administrators as well. Finally, we'll just talk, last slide here is just the strategic considerations. Again, we want to make sure that we are working in collaboration with our partners, meaning the county right-of-way administrators as well as the city municipal administrators. We've had some early discussions. We really promote continuing those discussions, making sure that we're, our city ordinances, our county ordinances, potentially our franchise agreements are all in alignment with our processes. So we're saying the same thing to the parties that are wanting to deploy these. And again, protecting our core values, safety and reliability. This is a developing issue, and so we want to continue to listen to what folks are doing. We're not the only county that this is occurring in. This is occurring across the nation. So we want to keep our ear to the rail and find out what the best practices are around these deployments. And continue awareness, you know, in a very proactive manner. So thanks for your time. If you have any questions, we could field those now. I think I'm a few minutes over.
I have lots of questions, but just one. This is to accommodate any particular new technologies for 5G. Is that what we're talking about for 5G technology?
So, you know, I'm gonna let Katie field this one.
Okay. Oh, no problem.
The small cell in the distributed antenna systems can be used in the future. They will be in certain areas to facilitate 5G. Mm-hmm. Around here currently, what we would probably see is more coverage gaps within a 4G system. 5G is projected to roll out around 2020. And because of what you're seeing in those pictures of how closely those antennas have to be grouped together, we're going to find it, at least in our areas, in more rural areas, I don't know if it'll be as cost-effective right out of the chute to deploy that, so I'm not sure if we'll see that immediately when that type of technology deploys. I think it'll be more common in heavily urbanized areas.
Okay. And then the other part of that is you were talking about your partners, but you talked about other local governments. What about your private partners? Are they private partners, or is this real estate you're talking about selling them space on poles their technology?
So we are talking with the other public right-of-way administrators, but from a private perspective, we've been having conversations with those that want to deploy this technology on our distribution system or our wood poles. And in fact, We are participating or actively participating in some discussions to find out more details about their timelines, the infrastructure themselves, the processes that they plan to deploy. And so we're actively working with them as well.
Excellent. Thank you.
So if this is all about coverage gaps, so we're going to be able to attach these to live trees and get coverage through Blue Pass?
So along the coverage gaps, if I did a quick math in my mind, those antennas are going to have to be virtually every block in an urban setting.
600 feet.
To not have the gaps in there, you've got to have overlap.
Some of the discussions we had within the city of Wenatchee was more of an initial deployment of around 24, mm-hmm. and up to a few hundred within the city of Wenatchee. So I think, to that point,
I mean, it's every block. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Good luck with that.
Thank you. We'll come back and share with you more as we learn more, for sure.
Any other questions or comments?
Is there a 6G right around the corner that's been? I'm kind of serious,
No.
To go to all this effort, is there something that make it all obsolete in a year and you have stuff hanging all over poles everywhere?
Yeah, Commissioner Ng, it's really a valid question, is where does this take us? And I think it's fair to say that, as Katie mentioned, as we understand it, the technology that they want to deploy today helps boost the 4G technology that we have today, but some of the same components can be upgraded to accommodate some of the 5G, and I can't speak for the 6G, but we know that there is a transitional or a compatibility between some of the 4G equipment and the 5G. It is fair to say that some of the antennas may need to be changed out. They may be larger, more complex, but there's likely to be some compatibility.
Any others? Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Sean, do you have a quick update legislatively on that?
Again, Sean Seaman of Chelan County PD, and there's no way to be quick on this. It's a 35-page bill with multiple sections to it, but I want this overview before we jump into what we wanted to talk about on this. I think, if it wasn't clear, reiterate that Chelan County PD is a supporter of broadband to the rural areas into our county. We've been promoting that through the build out of our own fiber optic system. So for us, the issue is not about 5G. It's really about what's in the bill related to pole attachments. So again, it's very important to know we and the PD Association are supporting deployment of 5G into the rural parts of our state. This bill had two primary sections. Section one is about cities and how these antennas could be implied on streetlights, buildings, traffic signals, you name it. And there was quite a bit of activity around that. The Association of Washington Cities was heavily involved. There's quite a bit of preemption, right-of-way issues, and the cities were really very interested in what that meant. They engaged on our side of the issue. Then we moved in it from a PUD Association on section two, which was about pole attachments. And there was an effort to couple these small antennas, these antennas you'll need every few hundred feet, to the pole attachment legislation that's currently on the books. Right now, back in 2008, legislation was agreed to by the parties and set how we would determine our pole attachment rates for telecommunications, cable industry, et cetera. This bill would eliminate that section and would have applied a whole new section of how pole attachment rates would be determined, which would have cut the costs or the revenue for the PDs, many of them in half and some of them more. And it would have gone to all pole attachments, not just new wireless antennas. All pole attachments would have had a new methodology, which would have been very detrimental to us as a utility. It would have meant us having to basically, in essence, support the cost of these, because we would no longer be recovering the costs that we have in place or the costs we incur to have these poles. So we've been pushing back on that issue. The utility industry as a whole, at least the public utilities, the consumer-owned utilities, the investor-owned utilities have a different formula. The PUDs have a different formula. So we have been working hard to separate that. Taking a change of the pole attachment rate is not going to push these 5G antennas out into the rural parts of the county. If you need them every 600 feet, we're not going to see these things deployed up our Chumpstick or Eagle Creek or the places up towards Manson. It's not, that's not what this is about. We've been effectively working that and getting that through to the state legislatures, but this bill has, even though it's not gotten past the cutoff dates, there was an effort to try and get something into the Senate budget to make this necessary to implement the budget. That did not happen. But if we go to a special session, which is very likely, then these bills would become alive again and we'd be back dealing with this issue. So we are paying close attention. We're continuing to work with the legislatures to ensure that we keep this decoupled, keep the poll attachment rate out of this, and let us work with the carriers on how could we deploy these on our infrastructure. We haven't had that conversation yet. And I'll just add, just saw this today, that Department of Labor Industries is now going into rulemaking around safety issues, telecommunication safety issues. And that just came out today. At least we just saw that today. So this issue is being raised as well on radio frequency issues and other safety issues. Are there any other questions I can answer on this bill in itself? Great. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sean. Nick?
Before we go away from the legislative support, if I could, I just want to make everyone aware that Mayor Gomes, Commissioner Baldwin, and I were part of a delegation that went to Olympia last week. And that delegation included our county engineer, Eric Pearson, Drew Dalgetty from Crunchback, Jeff Wilkins from the Transportation Council.
Paul Nelson from the school board.
Oh, that's right, Paul Nelson, representing the Cashmere School District and Chelan County Deputy. So he had a good perspective, too. But what we went to do at the organization of Senator Hawkins, and we thank him for his efforts in that, is to basically make a presentation on the Goodwin Bridge, which is the West Cashmere Bridge. It's slated for shutdown in, possibly within the next 3 years. We are still have about a $7.5 million shortfall, but we made the presentation to Senator King and Representative Cliburn, who are the chairs of their respective capital budget committees, and it was well received, but I didn't bring my pledge cards either for this. But they, they said, well, thank you for sharing, and which we were, thankful for the opportunity, because it really was pretty significant that they were willing to take the time and meet with us. But once again, Senator Hawkins had proposed this, and he actually had an amendment ready to go with the capital budget, which he ended up pulling, but he is very hopeful that there will be some opportunities in the near future. But, I felt like it was important for all of us to be aware of the progress on that, because it does relate to each one of our commissions and also to the city of Cashmere.
Thank you, Keith. Before we move on, any other legislative news anyone would like to share? Okay, thanks, Sean. Moving on to Wenatchee River Valley Regional Water Wastewater Study and potential new domestic water source, Ron Slaybaugh.
Jeff used to bring me along to these about 10 years ago or so. And one thing I'm going to miss, Patrick, I have heard good things about you taking on Mark Erdl's role as executive director. But Jeff and Mark used to rib each other quite a bit during these tri-commission meetings. I'm certainly going to miss that.
Okay.
Perhaps you get a little bit more comfortable with each other. You can provide some more entertainment value for us. Excellent. Two things to discuss. One is the Upper Wenatchee Valley Water and Wastewater Regionalization effort. Following PUD strategic planning in 2015, we invited customers to submit ideas that or projects that could enhance quality of life in Chelan County. We received one jointly from Leavenworth, Cashmere, Chelan County Board of Commissioners to look at the potential benefits of a regionalization approach providing water and wastewater services up the Wenatchee River. But right now, of course, we all provide these services individually, but we all share the common challenges where we have our aging infrastructure, aging workforce. We have our water quality in the Wenatchee River from the Wenatchee River TMDL. We all have to remove phosphorus from our wastewater discharges, water supply, water distribution. So individually, of course, we have these same challenges, but perhaps if we look at them regionally, there might be a way that we could save costs and pass those savings along to our ratepayers. So what we will do this year, we plan to hire a consultant. There's several qualified consultants out there that perform these type of studies regularly. We'll look at the regional approaches, things as simple as perhaps combined meter reading or billing, automatic meter reading approaches. We could also look at a single operation that could be owned and operated by Chelan PUD. So in the end, we'll have several different recommendations that the city leaders and also, sorry, Steve, we have Steve King from Peshawson Water District, too. Although not part of the original request, Peshawson did ask to join in on this effort as well. Peshawson Water District has, I believe, about 200, 200 to 300 connections up in, well, of course, in the community of Peshawson, the same area where Chelan PUD provides wastewater service. So we'll get started with this real soon. Joel Walensky from the City of Leavenworth, he isn't here today, but he has agreed to manage getting the consultant on board and manage the consultant study for us. We plan to get the consultant on board and begin work by June. That wraps up that effort. Any questions on that before we move on to regional water? Okay. Regional water system is jointly owned and operated by Chelan PUD, City of Wenatchee, and the East Wenatchee Water District. Currently, we serve in the neighborhood of 24 to 25,000 connections on both sides of the river, close to 70,000 people. The original source was put in back in, went into service in 1980 or 81. East Bank Aquifer on the Douglas County side of Rocky Reach Dam. Both the source capacity and the water rights that we have available there are, we're reaching those limits, anticipated dependent on growth within the next 7 to 10 years, we could reach those limits. So the regional water members have been looking at other approaches for providing regional water. We did acquire water rights from the Peshawson Water Users Association, so we have enough water, back in 2012, we have enough water rights for about 50 years or more, dependent on growth and any water conservation efforts, but we need to develop more source capacity. So right now we have that single source, single transmission main that delivers water to all of us. We performed a study several years ago, looked at initially about 10 different source options, narrowed that down to three, and then ultimately one, which happens to be another similar aquifer that we have identified on the Chelan County side of the Chelan PUD's Rock Island Dam. So right now, a regional has a contractor out there that is drilling a test well, and we'll pump that test well. It may require that a second well get drilled, but ultimately we'll be able to evaluate the capacity of that aquifer and whether it can meet the long-term needs of the regional water members. And if it does, we'll move on to additional planning and developing that source, a well field, a route analysis for a pipeline to get that water from Rock Island up into the city system. And, you know, best case scenario, that could take 4 to 5 years to complete, perhaps more, but certainly well in advance of when we will run out of our capacity at the East Bank Aquifer. Questions?
Or comments? Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it. Last item on the agenda, the Chelan Port District Associate Development Organization. Pat? Yep.
Commissioners, I don't know how this happened, but I'm up last and I have a Eat Your Vegetables type of presentation here. Can you bring that up, Sheila, to take the full screen? So I was asked to talk about our associate development organization and what that is and what it's supposed to be doing. Just a little bit of background, as someone mentioned earlier, Port has three lines of business. We're a small port district, but we manage and operate Pangbourne Airport. We have a port line of business, which operates 10 different buildings, including the CTC. They're all leased up currently. We've got about 80 acres of land, and we're in the development business as our port. And then lastly, We are the Associate Development Organization, and what does that mean? I will start by a little bit of background on the State Economic Development Network, how we're set up in Washington State. And at the state level, there's a Department of Commerce, and in that department, there are three departments that really help on economic development. They have a group of so-called sector specialists. These are experts in one aspect of the economy or another. So there's a maritime and aviation, a technology, a manufacturing. There's a group of smart people there. There's a business development division that helps with recruitment. Then there's an international trade division that promotes our exporters. On the local level, we have this entity called an ADO, an Associate Development Organization, and that is the state's local partner. The county commissioners designate a local agency to act as the ADO. I want to thank Commissioner England, Gaynor, and Overbay for recently designating the Port District to continue as the ADO. But in most counties of the state, the ADO is an economic development council. It's what's called an economic development council. That is a public and privately organized nonprofit where typically the private sector provides the majority of funding for this joint organization that pursues economic strategy. In Washington State, there are five port districts that act as the ADO, and those include the Port of Chelan County and the Port of Douglas County. ADOs act as agents of the state working on development projects. The responsibility is to work to retain, expand, and recruit business. We get a list from the state of active development prospects, active business prospects, and we respond to the state after contacting landowners and building owners and developers as to whether we have the goods to respond to a particular RFP or RFQ. And then if one of those prospects answers back that we're interested in that parcel, then we're the partner at the local level to try to develop that prospect and see if we can get to a deal. The state doesn't give us much to do this. Last year it was $54,000. The Port of Chelan County chooses to send $27,000 of that to the Small Business Development Center. That's Jim Fletcher. He's officed at our place. And he works with small businesses that are developing business plans to try to get their businesses off the ground or expanded. So we spend half of what we get on that activity. Just again, back to a traditional EDC that's usually publicly and privately funded, and they develop a plan and then execute the plan. We had the Quest for Economic Development here. That ceased about 15 years ago, and it was that time that the port became the EDC. I've mentioned retention and expansion, marketing the county to the outside world. Targeted recruitment efforts really fall within a traditional EDC. The Port of Chelan County hasn't had as aggressive an EDC or ADO program as other EDCs currently have. The port has chosen to support partners throughout the county, and currently we're sending about $164,000 to chambers around the county. We support, and I think very successfully, nonprofits and related projects. The Wine Alliance getting $54,000 this year for promoting the county wine industry. That's been going on for 10 years, I think, Commissioner Baldwin. And in that time, wineries in Chelan County have grown from number two, to now it's at 69. So this is an interesting effort that the Wine Alliance has been pursuing, and I think successful in marketing and developing our brand. The Cascade Foothills Farmlands Association promoting farm tourism gets $50,000 from the port. We contribute to activities like the Outdoor Recreation Study, the Greater Wenatchee Area Technology Association, supporting the upcoming Angels Conference. So that has really been the program in recent years.
The current commission is discussing expanding that ADO program, and I think, although we haven't adopted a formal plan yet, this is the direction that the commission is heading in, strengthening the program and doing more targeted business expansion, marketing, and recruitment. Quarterly meetings with the public and private sector leadership around where we're putting our resources to expand our economic activity. Regular meetings with the sector leaderships. We had a great meeting the other day that Craig organized with all the people in the county who are currently doing internet business. And there's a great group of people, very successful enterprises that are up in the hills that are making good livings doing this. And it's a vibrant sector in Chelan County right now. And lastly, one of the things that I've been struck with is that we as a county don't market our available land and buildings to the outside world the way a lot of our competitor regions are doing it. Virtually any other EDC in Washington State has a website that is promoting available land and buildings to people who might want to come here. And we don't do that, and I think the commission is interested in getting a site like that up, GIS-based, a site like that up and marketing it more aggressively to the world. The commission is in the middle of a strategic planning process. We're having regular meetings. The commission's working very hard to put this together. That process is going to continue into the summer of this year. Continued outreach to business groups and governmental leaders to discuss what the right strategy and role for the port is, and we welcome your input. Happy to answer any questions.
So what challenges do you see in marketing? I mean, and the reason I ask the question is that Quest, obviously, you know, they had the impetus from the private sector to try and attract more businesses. I know the port has been, aggressive in trying to do this similar promotion of the area. But are there inherent hurdles or obstacles that we face here that other areas do not, or what are our strong suits?
It's a great question, Commissioner. So here are my observations. We don't have a lot of inventory, what I'd call building and land inventory, that is ready to go. In the economic development world, there's a term, turnkey project, where the land has the utilities run to it and or has a building on site that is available. When I look around Chelan County, there aren't that many vacant buildings that are ready to lease. And we at the port don't have any inventory that's ready to lease. We would have to build something to suit, which is a more complicated, expensive, and difficult process. So we don't see a lot of commercial and industrial buildings that are vacant and available to accommodate new business. Similarly, I don't think there's a lot of Class A, Class B office space. So if a software company wanted to move here from the west side, there aren't a lot of options that we have available. So that's a challenge on the recruitment level. And that's one of the things that we, I think, as a public-private sector partnership need to discuss. And maybe I should just say, I guess my view of the world is that government provides infrastructure and the private sector provides enterprise capital, and together the chemistry should be job creation. But there's a slice of activity in the middle there between the two that has to take place to kind of foment and incubate. And what I think we as the port, together with the county, the city, the PUD need to do is look at opportunities to try to incubate a little bit more. From a port district perspective, I think we want to support private capital, upgrading their capacity, making it ready to go, and then helping the private side promote that to the world, promote its availability to the world. And that's one of the top issues, I think, on our agenda, is to get that property, both land and buildings, out there so the world can see it, so site selectors can see it, and we can engage in more conversations where we're trying to attract people here. Long-winded answer, complicated question.
So that's the end of the regular agenda. Any others before we move on to the mayor's? Any comments or information to share? Okay, with that, Mayor Cooney, would you like to start?
First, I'd like to introduce Mike Jackson, our new city administrator. And he started November 1st. And I don't know how common it is, but it's great working with somebody as closely oriented and valued as Mike. So I just really appreciate working with him. I also appreciate working with everybody around this table. I was sitting here listening to all of the different comments, and it's amazing how intertwined we all are and how much we can help each other. We can look after each other and all that. So I made some quick notes as to what's happening in Chelan. If you take all of the different things that have been going on in Chelan, nothing trumps the hospital right now, as far as it's a hot topic within our valley, and people are very for or against. You don't meet many people. There is a forum tomorrow night for the hospital bond issue. It will be voted on April 25th, and it will be a $44 million building if it happens. And everybody always asks me for my opinion, and I just say, ask Mike. So. But I'll move on. The water quality, that was on a list of things to talk about, and Mike Caputo already did. He addressed our council, and I want to make sure you know how much we appreciate Mike Caputo coming up along with Phil Long. It really made a lot of people open their eyes to the water quality issue in Lake Chelan. And last year, I want to make sure everybody knows that we put money in the budget for that lake quality study for equipment, and it's a matter of semantics. We are going to move it over to help fund the study. So the next issue is we are in the midst of doing our comp plan, and a couple of the key things for our comp plan in Chelan, I think they're different for every city, but it's protecting view corridors, lake access, land for affordable housing, and those are some of the key things that are coming out. I was listening to Frank and Pat talk about the differences on I wish we had that problem of having to figure out between retail and industry. We don't have that problem in Chelan. Maybe someday. Tonight at our council meeting, before that, we have a DOT presentation on three different projects that are happening within our valley that are DOT process, and it's repaving from Manson to the Safeway corner and then further on. The roundabout, which most people know, but it is a go, and it will be started within 4 weeks of right now. And there will be a workshop on those items before our council meeting. Tonight at the council meeting, we will have an administrative report for the one weighing of the bridge. And so far, there's been very good buy-in from different community people, people that run the chamber and our downtown association. So we're getting good buy-in. It's a big change for a city like Chelan to change that and to try to make that bridge safer and increase the sidewalk width and all of that. So the Three Fingers, most people know it's in the hands of the Supreme Court. We expect it to be within 6 months, some designation as to whether it will be pulled out of there, left alone, or given as ownership to the Goodfellow Brothers, who are the legal owners right now. Everywhere I go, I get, why aren't you making a park on there? And then I just remind them that it's private property. And asked them if we could put park benches and a trail through their property, and that doesn't go very far. I do want to share a quick little fun thing that we did 2 weeks ago today. We had an emergency preparedness meeting that we called, and we had 10 agencies come, and it was just to get ahead of the next wildfire and what we can do, or the next emergency. And 1 hour into the meeting, we had a bomb scare at the post office, and that was pretty interesting to see how quickly people jumped into action, and it was not a fake. I mean, it was a fake bomb threat, but and that's about it. Just being a Gonzaga alum, I just want to say, go Zags. Go Zags. We are doing something we've never done in the city of Chelan. We're giving all of the office people Saturday off.
Too generous.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
Question. You
go first.
Well, the question, I was up there last week, and the question arose in the group in the car, what direction will the one-way...
Into town.
Into town. Okay, I thought it'd be out of town.
And it was, there was a little bit of debate about that, but Jeff Wilkins helped us out, and also our SCJ Alliance, Dan Ireland consultant, said you want a way, one way in your front door and out your back door. So, yes, Ann.
Two things. The roundabout.
Yes.
You said that's a go. Where is that roundabout located?
So it's at the NOCM intersection.
That is a go.
That is a go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't get that.
The city of Chelan funded the shortfall of $280,000.
Okay, cool.
And just in keeping with the pledge card, I know that the PUD had... There's a pledge of $280,000. Just trying to be a good neighbor.
You are a good neighbor. Thank you.
Thank you.
And secondly, so just to kind of clarify a little bit, so we had a report from Mike Caputa on the Lake Chelan Water Quality group, which I'm a part of that group, and then you mentioned the water quality in Lake Chelan, and I just want people to be clear that there is not a water quality problem in Lake Chelan today. It is still an oligotrophic lake, which means
correct.
It's very, very clean. What Phil Long has attempted to do is just try to get some people going on. Let's begin to get some, you know, regular data points. It is the most understudied lake anywhere. You know, every Lake Tahoe, Flathead Lake, Lake Baikal, those are all lakes that have been studied. They have data points for 50 years plus. And Lake Chelan, as you could see from that, has very, very few. And so, just to kind of clarify it, we don't have a water quality problem in Lake Chelan. We drink the water. I'm about 18 miles up the lake on the south shore, and we still drink the water right out of the lake, unfiltered. Yeah, I don't know if anybody else, you know, I just wanted to make sure that we didn't get some kind of a rumor started. Not implying that you said that at all, Mike. But.
No, we have issues. No, never mind. Roundabout, not water quality. No, that is a really valid point. It opened the eyes of let's get ahead of things instead of wait 20 years from now and say, who were those leaders at the table at the time that did not do something? So,
right.
Valid point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If I could just add, you know, one other thing about phosphorus. When Mike gave his presentation, you know, he throws out there's phosphorus has been detected. But what he also told us is that it's a high level for the type of lake, like you mentioned. So, you know, when you hear a contaminant of any kind, I mean, there's the kind of the knee-jerk reaction that you have contamination, but to what degree? I mean, the same level of contamination of phosphorus or level of phosphorus for the regulation would not be the same in Lake Chelan, for example, as it would be in the Wenatchee River. So, I mean, I think that needs to be clarified too, but unfortunately, you know, if you have one part per million, you have contamination. It's not pure. And I think that's part of the, you know, the Seattle Times story where people react. You know, and that's all it has to do with the assumption that there's something wrong when it really is not a significant issue at all.
Just one data point, one test, one time, one certain period of the year. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Gomes, anything?
Jeff, may I make a comment? Bohm spoke very eloquently to Senator Curtis and Representative Cliburn last week. I wanted to compliment him on his efforts.
Good.
Regarding the Highway 2 bridge. Thanks, Jeff.
Mayor Breedenberg?
Thank you, Commissioners and guests. Real quickly, the waterfront we've been waiting on for a long time is now moving forward. We have 17 agencies and the three tribes have signed off. We're just waiting for the Corps, the last one. And it looks like probably by the end of the year we should have those permits. We have some developers looking at a full-service marina, mini-mart, and a motel with a restaurant on the waterfront, so that's a good start. We're doing a feasibility study for a new community center. We've tried for about 7 years since I've been mayor trying to get a new city hall, and so we partnered with the library and the senior center, and so we're going to build what we call a community center, put all three together with a large meeting room somewhere in there for the community. And our affordable housing unit got postponed a year. We were going to have a medium-sized one that's going to be built next year, not this year, and then 5 years later, we're in schedule to have one almost twice that large we've been working on now for about 5 years. And our park, thanks to the PUD, is doing very well. We started online reservations, and we are about 70% full now, and we haven't really advertised anything yet, so it's going well. Thank you.
Any questions or comments for Mayor Breedenberg? I think the park opens on March 31st.
May 1st,
okay.
Okay, so so May 1st, the first campers move into the...
Yeah,
okay. May 1st. It'd be really interesting to find out what your data points are on that and what the impact of that is.
We've always opened just before Memorial Day, so we have a lot of reservations for Apple Blossom Week. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have called, so we've talked with the park board from the PUD, Ray Heighton, and everybody at Jeff, and then so we're going to open on May 1st. And that first week, we know is pretty well going to be filled up. Mm-hmm. And we'll get some points and give you
a good deal.
Yeah. Thanks, Chief. Okay, that's it for the agenda. Anybody have anything else you want to add? Commissioner Smith?
You bet. Just one item. Many of you in the room are aware, but several new people are not, that for the last several years, a group of your elected officials have been actively engaged in developing a regional relationship with the state in the country of Kyrgyzstan, the Oblast of Izakul, and those four officials just happen to be sitting together here, and that's Doug England, Keith Gaynor, J.C. Baldwin, and myself. Three of us have actually traveled there. Well, this isn't directly related to the regional relationship that we've developed. I want to invite everybody in this room to an event. We are hosting the Rotary Clubs of North Central Washington, with Kashmir at the head, are hosting a group of young entrepreneurs into Chelan County the week of April 8th through 16th. It's entrepreneurs and innovators, and they're going to spend time in all of Chelan County, from Chelan to Leavenworth, and there's going to be a presentation by that group on Saturday, April 15th, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the North Central Washington, or the Wenatchee Valley Museum and Cultural Center here in Wenatchee. And by the way, I'm not sure, I know Commissioner Baldwin is aware of this, our small regional relationship group is having conversations now with the Wenatchee Valley Museum to talk about coming under the umbrella of their organization for long-term viability, because we do have a MOU just like we've had with the Misawa group. So anyway, this group, we've been working frantically for the last several weeks to put it together. Would love to invite anybody and everybody to come join them for their presentation and interaction with them April 15th, 2 to 4 p.m.
Thank you, Commissioner. Anything else? Any comments from the audience? Ron?
When I spoke about the regionalization study, I failed to mention the county's role in their effort as well. I mentioned that the Chelan County Board of Commissioners did sign the public power benefit request. And although they don't operate any utilities, the county does play a very key role in water supply and wastewater treatment through exempt wells and through septic tanks in the unincorporated rural areas. So Mike Caputa, despite how busy he is, has agreed to represent the county in our efforts and all the meetings and such, and the study that will be undertaken in this regionalization effort.
Good. Anybody else? We are complete. Thank you very much. Want to adjourn the meeting?
Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.